Greetings and salutations to our fine podcast audience. Welcome to 3Ps in the Pod, episode 303.
We made it, but it's 3Ps in a pod.
Yeah, oh, did I say something? I also noticed you changed it to the.
Did I say the?
You did.
Yeah. And 3Ps in the Pod.
All right. So
I don't know why, but that sounded very science fiction.
Really?
Yeah.
Did it?
Really? Oh, yeah. 3Ps in the Pod.
Okay.
Man, I feel a little bit like an escape pod, maybe. Maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
Maybe that's what I wanted.
I didn't think about that. I just noticed he changed
The article. It just came out that way. Man. Y'all think I intend things to happen like that, but I don't.
Just accidental.
We're looking for whatever.
Let's see what accidental things come out of our mouth the rest of this episode.
That's pretty much this whole podcast, guys.
For the most part.
Can y'all just be honest about that? It's just whatever's falling out. Yeah. So, looking back on Sunday, Nathan shared with us the importance of connecting.
Yes.
How important that is.
In small groups,
connecting with each other.
Carnivian time, we're kicking off small groups.
Right. It's a good season to do that. That's right. So you want to recap a little?
Yeah. I mean, the basic idea is that obviously we do small groups. And the reason why, and I say at the very beginning of the sermon, is all of us tend to get to a place, not early in life, but certainly once everything kind of settles into a rhythm, we tend to live in autopilot. We just kind of, I'm going about my day, I'm doing my thing. I don't really think much about all the different decisions I'm making. And what happens when you live in autopilot is you start kind of just drifting along the current of life. And the current of life rarely ever takes you anywhere good. It tends to be, if you're not intentional about it, your relationships don't just naturally get better on their own. You got to put work into that. You know, your health and all those things, they don't just naturally get better. In fact, everything kind of naturally decays. And if you don't put work, and what I said was everyone, you get to a place where you don't realize you're drifting until you get caught. And I was using the ocean analogy of you get caught in a riptide at some point. Life pulls you really hard and it feels like it happened all of a sudden. But then you get to a place and you look back and you go, whatever it was, my marriage got bad all of a sudden. But then when you look soft and look back, you go, oh, there were signs. Things were drifting. Things were going this way. Or, you know, all of a sudden my drinking became a problem. Well, it probably wasn't all of it. There were these natural things and everyone kind of looks at what those were. And so I talk about part of what happens in our spiritual life and in our personal moral life when it comes to drift is we isolate. We pull ourselves away. When you look at any of most of our stories where things blew up, we usually did that on our own. I talk about what's the phrase in AA, which is we get drunk alone, we get sober.
We get sober.
And the idea behind that is, I think, pretty evident. We kind of see that. But when I'm doing life on autopilot, kind of in my own head, what ends up happening is I'm drifting into negative things. And I talk about how often the reason that is because our lives on autopilot, we add more and things get more stressful. And when you're under stress, your brain naturally takes things and makes it feel like I'm under threat. Every stress, when I'm under pressure, under stress, whether it's at work, in a relationship, or just the natural tendency of life. I even talk in there about the noise and volume of the world we live in adds a level of stress to our life. So then when suddenly I got a relationship that's a little wonky because I drifted in a bad place, or work stress gets more, all of that starts to feel like I'm under threat. And my brain starts telling me, you gotta pull in, you gotta isolate, you gotta protect yourself. But honestly, the solution is, I need to actually let some people in. I need to move towards people. And I talk about in the message towards the end that this is actually part of the ways that we get better is the reason that we drift towards drinking or we drift towards self-medicating through scrolling or all of this is because when I'm dealing with those stress hormones and things like cortisol, things like even maybe adrenaline or, you know, norepinephrine, those kind of things. The thing that actually helps that is I got to get some dopamine to release or I got to get some oxytocin to help lower that. Well, scrolling on your phone will give you a little bit of dopamine.
Sure.
certainly drinking. Another one that a lot of people don't know is fighting, getting yelling, screaming. That releases some, which is why when you're really stressed, sometimes you go outside and you scream, you go, wow, that I felt something come out. But all of those come with other negative side effects.
Well, yeah, and in the counseling room, we call that the cheap dopamine.
That's right.
Right,
that's
it's right. Cheap dopamine.
That's the cheap kind.
But there are other things, and one of those is having a meaningful conversation with somebody.
Yes.
Laughing with other people, having like a bonding moment with other people.
As I said a few weeks ago, vulnerability.
Vulnerability.
Is the more weighty kind, the more difficult, but it is the better.
But your brain releases dopamine, oxytocin. And so I talk about, that's why when you actually call a friend on the phone, you're stressed out and you talk to them, it does, you actually let a load off. You actually let off some of those hormones. And I talk about, that's what small groups allow us to do for one another, is they are places for us where when I am naturally tended to go, my life, I don't have time to add a small group to my life. I don't have time to add other people to my life because my life is so busy. If you will fight that natural urge and you will actually let other people in and you will sit in an environment with some people where you say, here's what's really stressing me out right now. It will actually help to counteract a lot of the stress.
Do you think that's why, because you guys have heard this, and I know I have too, people will say, and I've said this, when it comes time to go into an environment like that, when I have my small group that I'm a part of, and I know it's coming up on a particular night, there's something in me often that'll go, oh,
yes.
I
hope they cancel.
Yeah, I don't have time for this, or there's other things that I need to be doing. I could really use that time, or I just don't feel like, I'm really tired and I'm worn down and I'd rather not go, or I'd rather not show up. And then I do. And then after it's over, I go, well, you know, I'm glad I did.
That's exactly way better. Right.
That was what I needed. That wasn't as bad as I anticipated, or it didn't take energy from me. I actually received something and I got some peace out of that. You think that's the same kind of thing?
Yeah, and that certainly is where I'm trying to get to in the sermon. Mm-hmm. And then I was thinking, hopefully we could have a conversation here about that the solution is actually the thing you're fighting against. The solution, when my life is super stressed and super pressured, and I go, I don't even have time to rest. But the truth is, and I've said this to people in my own small group, you're either going to get on the video call for an hour, or you're going to also open your phone and go on TikTok for an hour. But what has happened is your brain has been trained to go, that will actually stress relieve, when it doesn't stress relieve. No. And it's diminishing returns because it's why they call it doom scrolling for a reason, is your brain keeps going. You get less dopamine every time you scroll. And this is why it's an addiction, because the first time you take a hit of a drug, it really does something for you.
Sure.
And you eventually build up a tolerance. And you got to have more and more and more. But I tell them, you can do that and doom scroll, and it won't ever feel as good as you think it will. Mm-mm. Or you could also open your phone, get on the video call.
Well, I don't want to blame this. I hadn't had this thought until you were talking a minute ago about isolation and how dangerous it is for us, and that we're naturally built to connect with people, but we resist it. How dangerous the current form of Western Christianity is because we've given into that the most important part of Christianity is me and God.
Right.
It's just me and God. Yeah. And that all I really need, if I could get really spiritually mature, I wouldn't need anybody else but God. So I need to learn more. I need to pray more. It's just me and God. And the thought that I should connect with other people, other believers, to somehow deepen my spiritual life it's really antithetical to what is normally heard everywhere. I should listen to worship music, just me and worship music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I should pray. I should read my Bible. It's just me and God and these items. Mm-hmm. But, and again, I don't know this comes from God, but that is not the pattern that you see Jesus setting for human beings, nor what God made human beings to do.
Yeah.
We are relational beings by nature. And when we do what he designed us to do, we do get the benefits that he intended us to have. Mm-hmm. There's all the things that we are looking for happen best in those kind of environments. Now, honestly, I get people say, I get hurt when I get, that is possible. Sure. It is possible that we will hurt each other. But even that If I will press into the relationship and talk about it,
yeah,
I begin to learn skills that can keep that too from becoming an end-all, be-all, run-back to isolation thing if I'll do it.
And I've been thinking, as both of y'all have been talking, especially when, Nathan, you sort of introduced that isolation tendency that, you know, comes when we're going through those really hard things.
Right.
It's, and then the way you described it, you basically described what in the counseling world that I'm part of is we talk about how trauma works in the body or stress and anxiety works in the brain and how it turns on all of those alert systems that tell you that you're in danger. And so what a lot of people try to do is they just they internalize all of this pain, all of this trauma, all this stuff that they're going through, and they don't realize that sometimes, not always, but sometimes, if I just talk about it with another person that will just listen with some level of objectivity and empathy and allow me to process through all of that, something happens in the chemical reactions that are going on inside of your brain that brings all of that into a different space where it just doesn't feel the way it feels when you're holding it all inside. I've sat with so many people that come in and are saying something to the effect of, I don't know what's happening to me, but it got to the point where I'm waking up in the middle of the night in cold sweats. I can't breathe. I'm having panic attacks on the way to and from work. Something's going on in me. And I go, hey, let's talk about what, let me back up. Tell me what's going on in your life right now, or what happened in your life during this time. We start exploring. I just start picking on certain things. And pretty soon they wind up telling me these life stories about, you know, my parent who was addicted, or someone who hurt me in the past, or some, you know, some type of trauma that I went through. And then there'll be some point, and I've heard this many, many times, it's like, you know, I've never really talked about it in this way before. I've thought about it, and people knew that it happened to me, but I never really sat and talked to anybody about it. And something about that experience.
Yeah.
And I think this is part of what God designed in us.
Yes.
Well, and often when you share it, particularly in a group setting, whether, like, you know, it's one of the things I love about 12-step groups is we all know we're there.
Yep.
Because we have a problem.
Yep.
Nobody's there acting like they. But even in small group, when you I have seldom had anybody share anything or me share anything in a small group that somebody in the group doesn't eventually say, yeah, me too.
Yeah.
And then they offer. I remember sitting in a situation and sharing it with somebody, and somebody said, I know it's hard to hear right now, but one day this will be better.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because I've been where you are, and it's hard to see it right now. But one day this will just be a memory, a story that you'll tell, and you will get through this if you just keep putting one foot in front of another. Let us help you. You'll get better. Just talking about it and hearing other people that you can see in the way they talk about it, they have made it.
Yeah.
They are still alive.
Yeah.
It lowers all of that and you feel better.
Mm-hmm.
But again, going back to what I was saying about the way I think we underplay that the enemy builds up the fear we have about talking about it and tells us I'm the only one.
Yeah.
This is super embarrassing. Even if it's not something I did, even if it's something that happened to me, I feel like as I think about it, I think I probably caused that in some way. Or if it's something in my family, I think, oh, I should have done, that wouldn't have happened if I had just done something else. And it's, I think when I share it, everybody's going to know that I screwed up and that they're going to, they may not say it, but I'll be able to tell. They'll all think that I'm bad.
Yeah.
And what inevitably happens is the opposite.
Yes. I was just listening to a podcast recently talking about...
was it Three Peas in a Pod?
Nope, not this one. I do not listen
was
to this
Was it
one.
Three Peas in the Pod?
No, neither one. Because I don't listen to my own, because I'm in it. That's so true. Why would I listen? Anyway, listening to this psychologist, and she was talking about this phenomenon that goes on inside most people is when I enter into a social situation where I'm going to be interacting with other people, there's something in all of us that anticipates what that's going to be like. Mm-hmm. And almost every estimation you have about how it's going to go is worse than what actually happens.
That's right.
And they've done studies on this, and they'll ask people, okay, you're about to go in and talk to these people about this. How you think that's going to go? And they'll rate it. And then they'll go do it. They'll come back and say, how'd that go? And it's always better.
Yeah, that's right.
It's never as bad as what I think. I think we all have that sense of, like I just said about walking into my small group, and it's like, this is going to drain me. This is not going to be enjoyable. This is that and that. And then I come out and I'm always like, that was better than I expected.
Yeah.
You know, there's something in us that just dreads that. And I think it's part of that. I gotta reach out. I gotta open up. I gotta share some things about me. And it just feels vulnerable, unsafe, or whatever it might feel like. And it rarely ever is. Yep. You're not wrong, Ed, when you said there are times when people are going to disappoint you. They're going to hurt you. That will happen. But even that, I find, is not as devastating as we often anticipate it.
Well, after a while, you can learn when that happens. I don't have to do it right in the moment. I don't have to blow up. But I now know I can talk about that. Yeah, and that, too, can find some safety and relief. And the person rarely, and sometimes it's true, rarely did they intend to hurt me the way I took it.
Yes. Mm. And it becomes a part of the way that God heals us and part of the way that God helps us to get into a place where I'm not living constantly under the constant fear of threat and the constant fear of, I have to protect myself, because no one sets out to blow up their lives. And that's the part of the verse that I bring up from Hebrews that I kind of preach on, where it says, you know, see to it that none of you has a sinful, unbelieving heart. But then it adds the part of encourage one another, so none of you is hardened by sin's deceitfulness. And sometimes I think the way I've read that is like, my personal sin will deceive me that it's not that big of a deal, and you know, you should get, and I think that's true. I think that happens. I think the other part, though, is the way that sin is used there is as the enemy of the great cosmic sin that exists. And part of the deceitfulness is the way that we're talking about, even not that isolation is a sin, but it is a tool of the enemy to put me in places where I will be more tempted to do things that will drag me away. And I'll just say, I know a lot of guys that I've talked to because of issues in my own life, where all of the issues started because I didn't go to bed when my wife went to bed.
Ooh.
She went to bed. There's nothing sinful about not going to bed when my wife goes to bed, but there's a little deceitfulness of, I'm just going to stay up and play some video games. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to stay up and scroll on my phone a little bit longer. And then eventually, not the first night, not the second night, not the fourth night, right? Mm-hmm. Or the same thing of, I'm going to text some people. And we shouldn't really be, there's really no reason for me to be texting this late at night. There's no reason for me to be texting someone else doesn't know about. There's not a reason for me to be doing X, Y, and Z. None of that in itself is a sin. But the deceitfulness is going, don't tell anybody, hide it, keep it to yourself. Do some things nobody knows about. And then eventually I find myself, and I think about the story of David and Bathsheba, where it says at the time that kings go to war, David was not at war. And there's this idea of, you've put yourself in a position where you're not supposed to be
there.
You
weren't supposed to be there.
You're not supposed to be there at that time. And so I think about marriages when you talk about the drift, or you talk about things at work, or you talk about addictions you get into. No one sets out with the first drink to go, well, this is going to make it where I can't see my kids anymore. And it's worth it. Yeah. No one thinks that. What you deceive yourself to is, no one's going to get hurt. This isn't, and everyone who's told me this was a problem, this ain't a problem for me.
Yeah.
And all of us have done that in some area in life. It's a different thing. It's the deceitfulness of sin.
Yep.
And I think about the tools of our enemy to say, I know all the research out there that the phone is destroying my life, but I can handle X, Y, and Z. And you don't realize it's not the phone that's going to destroy your life. Mm-hmm. It's where this thing eventually is going to lead. The part of me that goes, I can't talk about anything to anyone. I can't do difficult things anymore. I can't, whatever those things are that will isolate me, it's the isolation or the deceitfulness or where I end up that will put me in a position to do something that will blow up.
Well, I think all of sin has a deceitfulness to it, in that even though I shouldn't say old fashioned, it's just the ones that don't require anything other than somebody hurts me. I choose not to forgive. I don't realize that that's going to make me begin to, down the road, not trust other people because they shouldn't hurt me, and I probably won't be able to forgive them. And then over time, I become a person that's cynical about every person around me. Mm-hmm. And I don't, and sin continually tells me what I'm doing is protecting myself.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I'm protecting myself.
Yeah.
And what I'm doing is hurting myself.
Yeah.
So,
well, kind of related to what we're talking about of this isolation thing, mm-hmm. and then, you know, feeling burned by relationships. We got a question just a few weeks ago that kind of relates to this, and we held on to it for this podcast. We're going to answer it real quick before we wrap up. It's actually, they even say, this is not really a question. It's just a statement. They just want us to react to it. And I appreciate that you reached out on this because absolutely. I think it's definitely an issue that deserves being talked about. So here's what the question was from one of our listeners. I have recently felt burnt out in my relationship with the church. Mm-hmm. But I have continued to attend solely out of obedience to God. I don't really have a question so much as I know this is a problem, mm-hmm. and I would love some insight on this. So we got somebody who feels just they're coming out of obligation or out of obedience to God. I know I should do this, but I'm feeling burned on this whole experience of connecting with people or coming mm-hmm. to church. What would you guys have to say to somebody in that spot right now?
I would say good for you for recognizing one, that, you know, this is a problem. This is not the way you want to experience your life with God.
Yeah.
Good for you for continuing
in
obedience and saying, but I also know God has a reason that this is something that he instructs me to do and he calls me to do. And so I'm going to do that. I think my insight I would give is, and I've said this to other people when it comes to similar things. I don't think they've used the same term of burnout and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But when they say, I feel like I'm not getting what I used to get.
Yeah, I don't feel it anymore.
I don't feel it anymore. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and the implied part of it is, and that means I don't really want to come anymore.
Yeah.
Like what I have frequently said to people is the attendance is not what's causing the feeling of burnout. Mm-hmm. So then the solution is not, well, if I stop coming, that problem will go away in the same way that, and I've had times like this in my relationship with my own spouse. There are times where we have an issue and it's difficult to talk about whatever the issue is, but I know the solution is let's just keep not talking about it and it will go away. That's now, I pretend like that'll be the issue and sometimes I'll do that. Mm-hmm. But, and as we've matured in our marriage, whatever you call it, the little window of time we play the game of we're not going to talk. It gets shorter and shorter. We're much better at just coming on, hey, we both feel there's an issue. Let's talk about what the thing is. And so that's how I would start is I appreciate. And I also would say, I think this is normal.
Yes.
I think lots of us who follow Jesus have had times where, and I'd say there have been times where I've been in ministry and showing up on a Sunday feels like, and this is the part I feel embarrassed. Sometimes I'm like, well, I get a paycheck to be here, so I better show up. Mm-hmm. They expect me to be here. I better be here. And I don't get something out of it. I don't feel it, whatever that kind of means. So I'll kind of end it there. I think it's normal. And I don't think the problem is not the attendance. So the solution isn't removing the attendance. There's probably a deeper problem.
Yeah, I would even say to the person after we had talked and I'd said the things that you just said, I would say, I'd like to you to try to reframe it in your head and say, I know this is a problem. Maybe that statement itself is not true. Mm. This may be normal.
Right.
And it may not be a problem.
Mm.
It may be because it seems to be, when you've read as much church history as we have, you know, there are no people that we now call saints for the last 2,000 years that didn't have periods in their lives.
Right.
Where they didn't feel exactly what you are.
That's right.
And what you have to lean into is that you said, I'm doing it out of obedience. Mm-hmm. Well, Jesus says obedience is love.
That's right.
And we tend to think of love is when I feel it. And there's a lot of things that go into making me feel certain things. So I don't want to get into that. And even the feeling of I'm not feeling anything. There's a lot that goes into that. So, you know, you may need to talk to somebody. And the person I'd first talked to about it is primarily, I'd talk to the Lord about it. Lord, mm-hmm. I'm showing up mm-hmm. because you said I should, mm-hmm. and I'm going to continue to do that because I love you, and you said that obedience is love. And so I'm just going to continue to do this and trust that this will be for my good. Mm-hmm. There was a large period of my life where I read almost everything about Mother Teresa I could find. And, you know, she became Nobel Prize winner. She became heralded by people all over the world. And what nobody knew until she had died and she was going through the process that I just lost the word for, basically being...
Dark night of the soul.
No, I'm talking about being vetted as a saint.
Sainthood.
Yeah.
Veneration.
Veneration. When they're mm-hmm. it's basically the church goes through and did all the things we actually thought about her, are those true? Now that we can go and talk to everybody.
Yeah.
And what we found is she would write to her mentors and the people she had known. And she had not felt mm-hmm. close to the Lord since maybe 20, 30 years of her life when she was just being lifted up so high. And she counted it as an answer to the prayers that she had prayed. What Paul said, I want to know the sufferings of Christ. Mm-hmm. And she said, I'm thankful that the Lord allowed me to know what it felt like when he said, my God, why have you forsaken me? Mm-hmm. And she just counted it as obedience. I continue to do what the Lord asked me to do because mm-hmm. I love him.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to take the lack of feeling as a signal that something is necessarily wrong.
That's right.
And that's why I would say maybe you need to mm-hmm. reframe it in your head.
Well, and and there's nothing I think other than the only thing I would maybe tag on to what those guys just said is you say in your question, I feel burned out in my relationship with the church, which, first of all, good for you for acknowledging that this is a relationship.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And I think I would lean into that phrase and say, the nature of relationships is pretty much what you're experiencing.
That's right.
That is a part of what it means to be in relationship. Yeah. And so it doesn't mean you've done anything wrong. It doesn't mean it may mean someone did something wrong to you that's caused you to feel this way, but maybe not.
That's right.
It just might be baked into the nature of what it means to have a relationship. Sometimes it's hard. Sometimes it's easy. And just like you in a marriage even. But one thing I know from working with couples is the only way to solve a relationship problem is turning inward to the relationship, not turning outside the relationship.
Right.
So that's sort of what you said, Nathan, is we know the solution is just don't quit.
That's right.
That certainly won't solve it. Lean in, and it may take a little while. It may take a long time, but I do know that's where, if the feeling does come back that this doesn't feel as hard as it does right now, and if it does smooth out and get easier, I know it will come within the community, within the relationship with the church that you have. So stay in it. Yeah. That's the best way I know to encourage you. So anything else to add to that?
No.
Okay. I don't really have anything.
Yeah. Okay. Other than I would, like you said, I would try and figure out mm-hmm. The problem may be something else. And the problem may be my expectation of what it is.
Yeah.
And it may be.
Well, and it might be what we talked about earlier in the first part of the podcast is it may be that I do need to open up to a brother or a sister about how I'm feeling. I wonder if you've done that. Maybe you have. But if you haven't, I would strongly encourage that. If you do have close relationships with a brother or sister in Christ in the church, to go to them and say, hey, that you haven't told yet. Say, man, I haven't said this to you, but you just need to know I'm struggling right now and things aren't going very easy for me. And would you encourage me? Would you pray for me? Would you check in on me? And if you have people in your life that you feel comfortable saying that to, I bet you they also care enough to say, absolutely, I'm with you on this. Let me walk beside you. Let me pray for you. Let me walk with you through this time. Mm-hmm. And I'll bet that would be the place that if it's going to turn soon, it would turn right there.
Yeah. So. And you might find in mm-hmm. that process, mm-hmm. there's all different kinds of, as we said, there may be other things that are going on. It may be something in my life that's outside of the church. And my life right now
maybe.
Is so, I know for me, the times where it has been hard to find joy in being in the church. It's often hard for me to find joy anywhere.
Yeah,
and what I find is my life has become so overwhelmed and so stressed that I have allowed that. And once again, this is, I'm going to just say this part. It's not a sin to feel the way you're feeling.
No.
But there is a way that the deceitfulness can get in there. And it can start to trick me into, as we've said, if I'm feeling this way, that, and I know people who feel this, maybe that's a sign that God isn't there anymore. God doesn't speak, or I've done something wrong, or someone else did something wrong. And I can allow that deceit to get into my soul and cause me to pull away. But when I open up to another person, I can allow them to remind me of the truth, and all the stuff we've just said can remind you of that truth. And you can get brought back to your relationship with the Father and with the Son and with the Spirit, and that you get brought into, and that encourages you and helps you to keep going. Mm-hmm. So I would encourage you, as we've already said, is maybe go back, reevaluate your expectation of what do I even expect to get out of this? Maybe I need to open up to somebody. Mm-hmm. Maybe I need to examine stuff in my own life and go, what might be at the root of this? But I think we've all said the solution isn't walking away.
And I feel like this goes without saying, but I'll say it anyway, because I don't think we've said it quite this way. But that phrase in the Psalm 51, where David comes to the Lord, he confesses, and he says, "Restore to me the joy of my salvation." I think that should be your prayer.
Yes.
Just keep praying that prayer. Yeah. Father, restore to me the joy of my salvation in this body of believers, in your church, and ask for it. And then just keep asking, keep knocking, and who knows what God will do.
That's right.
So, all right. That's enough for today. We will be back next time doing the same thing. We're going to look back on the message from Sunday, do a little deep dive. And if you have questions about anything that's going on in your life that we've been talking about on Sundays, send that to us. We'll work it in. We'll incorporate it, try to answer your questions. See you next time.